Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, they are available on Spotify. Well, friends, we made it through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. And hopefully you got to watch some good movies over the past week, whether you're watching them at home or adventuring out into the public. I didn't get the chance to see anything new this week because, full disclosure, this weekend is the opening weekend of the radio version of Neil Simon's Plaza Suite, which is happening at the Cat Theater, October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. And full disclosure, I'm directing this. And you can go to thecattheater.com for tickets. Friday and Saturday performances are at 8 o'clock. Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock. So I'll get to what videos I watched and what other older old films that I watched over the week. But first, and also, by the way, it was National Podcast Day a few days ago. And what a way to celebrate it but with this. So Glenn Dobbs, the founder of Indie Bard Fest, this is the Plaza Suite is an offshoot of Indie Bard Fest. Glenn Dobbs, the founder of Indie Bard Fest, wanted to interview yours truly since he is directing this production of Plaza Suite. So friends, strap in, get ready, enjoy this.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. Is Gandalf actually playing Prospero from The Tempest? But first, we have a special guest here on Bard Radio. Mr. Matthew Soucy is joining us and is directing an upcoming play. Matthew, welcome to I Love My Will.
Thanks, Glenn. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Matthew, here on WBARD, we usually discuss all things Willie. But today we're doing something a little bit different. You're involved with Bard Fest, is that right?
Yes, Glenn, that is absolutely correct. I'm proud to be one of the unusual suspects at Bard Fest the last couple of years. And after a while with Bard Fest, you can only do the 38 plays so many times. And I know Bard Fest wanted to do an offshoot after a few years called the Prestige Project. And that would be tapping into the Great American Theater book of Great American plays. And the original production was supposed to be Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. That was supposed to happen in October of 2020. But something happened. And it was delayed once and then delayed twice for safety reasons. But the company had the theater space, the theater time, and the talent. And so we figured, what could we do that could be a socially distant production? And thus the wheels in the director's head, that would be me, thought of one play, but it was already done. Somebody had already picked up the rights to it. I do not curse them because I'm really happy with the show that we have now. What would happen if we did Neil Simon's Plaza Suite as a radio play? And
why Neil Simon? Why did you pick that?
Well, I had directed it before. Two, there is some name recognition. We're dealing with a show that, for certain members of our audience, this might be the first theatrical experience they've had since the world turned into a petri dish.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about and a lot of theaters are doing this, where they're doing stripped down, socially distant productions. I was a house manager at Richmond Civica earlier in September for the two-man production of Tuesdays with Maury is an example. Yeah. And a lot of other places are doing shows like that. And when I've had a history of directing radio plays. I love radio plays. It's sort of a part of my bread and butter. And since I had directed Plaza Suite as a regular play a decade ago, I thought, oh, it's only three actors on stage at one time, as well as a sound effects table. So it is a socially distant production of Plaza Suite. And I think also the curiosity factor, especially if you've seen Plaza Suite, is how are they going to pull this off? And I think that's what hopefully is one of the big selling points to this production.
So if I take it from your discussion, you felt like that with COVID going on and all of the world's news going on, all being sort of, what's the Shakespeare term, in the toilet, I think you were wanting to do something funny. Is that right?
Well, and I there was that. And like I said, I had a quartet of actors that we were supposed to do another project together. And when I pitched it to them, they all were genuinely excited to tackle this concept. Now, I know a part of it is also they haven't done a show since everything went kablooey. So I know there's that. But I think also they rose to the challenge of how can we pull this off? And I will tell you, if you've seen radio plays, first off, good for you. But secondly, there's a little mashup of because it's done like a radio play, like it's a radio station in 1968. But there's also a little bit of breaking the fourth wall. There's also breaking the wall between the actors and the sound orchestra, one man band over there. So it's not just 2 hours of actors looking at a script. There's moments of it where there is contact both emotionally and physically with the actors as well as the audience.
So when you're directing a play that for many is well known, such as the Neil Simon play, how do you get your actors to bring the play to life when they're working at a microphone and you're watching this? What are some of the challenges with that?
I think the most is the physical. Mr. Simon kind of knew his way around dialogue, as we've discovered working on this show. And in the case of the Plaza Suite, for those who don't know, it's three acts set in the same location, Suite 719 of the Plaza Hotel in New York City, and it's three different days. Act one is a couple who think they're celebrating their 23rd or 24th marriage and wedding anniversary, and it starts to take kind of a dark turn. Act two, you have a famous Hollywood producer back in New York and he brings to his hotel room his high school sweetheart. I'll let you do the math. And then Act Three is the day of a wedding, and the bride, the father, and the mother of the bride are a little under stress because the bride has locked herself in the bathroom.
Okay.
So
from there, shenanigans ensue. I should reintroduce you. We're talking to Mr. Matthew Soucy, director for Bardfest, Indie Shakespeare Festival, and we're talking about an upcoming production where they're moving away from their usual fare and tackling some classic Neil Simon. Now, the play is at the Cat Theater, 254 Veterans Way, Carmel, Indiana, and it opens tomorrow. It plays Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m. and on Sunday at 2 o'clock. And then the following weekend, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 o'clock. As you can tell, tickets are already moving.
Yep.
And you can get tickets by going to thecattheater.com, where you can reserve your own seats to be able to get into the show. So, Matthew, if you would, talk a little bit about what the Cat Theater is trying to do to make this a safe and enjoyable experience during this pandemic.
I'm glad you asked that, Glenn. So we have a limited number of seats, so I'd say get your tickets now. Every audience members will be masked, and they'll be socially distant from everybody. If we play our cards right, and this will be a lovely dilemma to have, we could fit about, I think, 60 people, because Hamilton County laws are different than Marion County. But So Act 1 is about an hour, and then Act 2 and 3 are considerably less than that. So what I've experienced with, well, actually, it was a show you directed, Glenn, Shakespeare's long-lost first play. When you go into intermission, you can use the restroom, but everybody will leave the building for the intermission time. The other aspect is we will wait until every audience member is back in their seat before we begin Act 2 and Act 3. So it's not like, you know, if there's a line, a socially distant line to the restroom or the snack bar, we'll wait for you. So I think between that and the fact that once the show is over, there's going to be no commiserating in the lobby or, you know, getting autographs from the actors outside the building. We will say thank you, be safe, and be on your way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I've read from the literature is that the Cat Theater is checking everybody's temperature as they come in.
Yes, they are. Yes, we have we do have a lovely it's not a gun. It just looks like one. And it takes your forehead, or I believe your wrist, and it takes your temperature. And if your temperature is kind of the middle of the dial of the radio station, radio band, you're fine. If you are on the right hand side and you're in triple digits, we're going to ask you to come back another day.
And also, we have plenty of hand sanitizer there.
Plenty.
And also, if you come without a mask, we'll be happy to sell you one.
Plenty.
At the location. So that's all very exciting. So you see Indie Shakespeare Festival moving into doing more traditional plays in the future.
Well, yes. Hopefully next year in October of 2021, the same actors that are involved in Plaza Suite, that would be Nan Macy, Tony Armstrong, Afton Shepherd, Matt Walls, and also special shout out to Tony Johnson, who is the sound orchestra, as well as the WCAT. Hope you don't mind me mentioning another radio station, Glenn. WCAT's announcer. But the four actors I mentioned, Tony and Afton and Nan and Matt, will be in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in October of 21, directed by yours truly.
Well, very good. That all sounds very exciting. So when you're trying to put the show together, how do you create a sense of scene where the actors are at the microphone? Is it purely dialogue? Is there some specific techniques you use to try to create a sense of place and time? What was your thought process with that?
Well, we began by doing Zoom rehearsals, like a lot of people, and talking about the era, talking about the relationship between the characters. Even though it is a radio play, there are some costume items that imply a marriage, a meeting with an old girlfriend, a businessman coming home, or in this case, coming back to a hotel room with his wife on their anniversary. So there's that element. Tony Johnson, as I said, who is our sound orchestra, it's been fun seeing him add things, everything from the sound effects table with elements of shoes. We have three sets of shoes for three different types of characters. We have a doorway. We have everything as simple as newspapers rustling or a jacket being torn, a knock on a door, a window. There's several moments in that are written in the play. Again, this play was not intended to be a radio play, but there's moments where the actors look outside a window, and Tony is a wonderfully talented and physical gentleman who's able to hoist up a window frame for the actors to look out of. So again, there's the moments of how are they going to pull off this moment if you know this certain scenes. Like there's a character that climbs out of a window. There is a kind of a seduction dance between the Hollywood producer and his high school sweetheart in Act 2. And the combination of sounds from the soundboard and the wonderful performances from my quartet of actors and the audience's imagination, that will add for a fun and safe evening of theater.
It does sound very exciting. Can you talk a little bit about the caliber of acting talent that you've assembled?
My goodness. Now, I have worked with Matt Walls and Afton Shepherd in last year's production of Henry the Fourth, Part 1, directed by, well, that would be you, Glenn. And I know...
I should interrupt there for a moment.
Oh, okay.
So just a quick question here. Glenn Dobbs, great director or greatest director?
How about...
Go on with your story, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Second greatest director. How about that? And Nan, I've known for many years, and the fun thing was, and Tony Johnson I've known for a while, and Tony Armstrong, he is an elite group. He has been directed by two Sosies. He has been directed by my lovely wife Lynn, the smart one, the great one, and now he's slumming it working with yours truly.
Well, very good. It sounds like you've got quite a team assembled.
We do.
One more time, folks. This is an upcoming play, Plaza Suite. Reimagined as a radio play directed by Mr. Matthew Sosi of WFYI fame and the Richmond Shakespeare Festival. The play will be at the Cat Theater, 254 Veterans Way, Carmel, Indiana. It's a lovely theater that's becoming quite the spot for theater to see in town. It is going to be tomorrow night at 8 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m., and Sunday at 2 o'clock. The following weekend will be the same times. We encourage you to get there a little bit early to get seated because we want to make sure we're nice and safe with CDC protocol. So that way you can have a safe and enjoyable experience. And Matt, as we conclude our interview today, one of the things I'd like you to comment on is why do you think theater matters during these times?
Well, for one thing, it gets us out of the house. We are individuals that hopefully have some form of artistic expression, whether you think you're an artist or not. We're also a social species. And I know it's been rough since March. You can only watch Netflix so much. I have a stack of movies I still haven't touched yet. But we like to connect with people, and we're trying to do it safe and still entertain folks. The production you had earlier this year, it was everything. It was really an inspiration for me about doing a show right. Now, you had also the advantage of doing it outside, so there was literal distance between the actors and your audience. And this is going to be an interesting step forward, I hope, because we're inside, but we're doing it distance, and we're doing it safe, and we're doing it lovingly and comforting for my actors as well as our audience. So I'm hoping that this is a step in the right direction. What has been fascinating working with my actors, we have been together mentally and emotionally since March. We have been getting together via Zoom and having happy hour and talking. You know, this was when we thought we were doing Virginia Woolf. But over time, because of changes, there is the adage of the show must go on. But at the state we're at now, it could have been the first week of read-throughs, or it could be the night before we open. If there is any problem whatsoever, the show shuts down, and everybody involved in this is aware of this and they're ready for it. So the fact that we are at the time of this recording going to do our final dress rehearsal and open, the fact that we knock on whatever. I think we're able to pull this off and pull it off right. And I'm really excited about that. And I hope that we bring a sense of normality and a sense of comfort. The term I like to use is we're making chicken salad out of chicken stuff. And you got some fine chicken salad happening up in Carmel at the Cat this weekend and next weekend.
Again, to get tickets that apparently already selling out, it's at thecattheater.com. You can also check out Bardfest on Facebook and also indiebardfest.com. Matt Sosi, I appreciate you being on I Love My Will Shakespeare Show, and we wish you all the legs broken and your upcoming show. It sounds like it's going to be a real treat, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Glenn. I'm a longtime listener, first-time guest, and, yes, a sustaining member of WBARD.
There you go. There you go. Thank you, folks, and we'll be right back with more of the documentary on Ian McKellen actually playing Prospero in The Lord of the Rings.
Yep, that's Glenn Dobbs. That's the founder of Indie Bard Fest. Good guy. Neil Simon's Plaza Suite, the live radio version, is happening at the Cat Theater in Carmel, October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, 8 p.m. curtain for Friday and Saturdays, and 2 p.m. curtains for the Sunday matinees. You can go to thecattheater.com for all the information. And, of course, a reminder, the Heartland Film Festival is happening October 8th through the 18th. It's virtual. You can go online to heartlandfilm.org for all the info over there. So check that out at the Heartland Film Festival. Over at the Can-Can on Tuesday, October 6th, is three stories, a Can-Can conversation series about sexual assault. And part two will be the discussion of the film The Invisible War at 7 o'clock. Wednesday, October 2nd, it is a founding member, neighbor, member event. Wednesday, October 7th, outdoors, they are showing Hunt for the Wilder People. And Wednesday, October 14th, as a part of their Can-Can Outdoor series, Eraserhead. And then Wednesday, October 21st, as a part of their outdoor series, Get Out. And Wednesday, October 28th, Shaun of the Dead, all happening at the Can-Can. Also, at IU Cinema, and by the way, salute to John Vickers. Thank you, friend. Thursday, September 10th, that's, of course, a while back, but is running through October 14th, Wednesday, October 14th. Papicha is a virtual event. Also screening through October 14th, Made in Bangladesh. Through October 3rd is I Used to Go There. And through Thursday, October 8th, yes, the documentary RBG. And then running through October 7th is the film Dead, and running through October 14th, Maroney for President. All of that is happening. And Monday, October 5th through Wednesday, October 7th, Stuffed. And Thursday, October 6th, a virtual event, conversation with Lilis Markham, all happening at IU Cinema. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, on screen one, we have Possessor, and along with that, The Fifth Element. On screen two, you have An American Werewolf in London and The Evil Dead, the original Evil Dead. And apparently after that, you get Evil Dead 2. On screen three, you have Hocus Pocus, Beetlejuice, and Save Yourselves. And on screen four, you have Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, as well as Tenet. All of that is happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline, you have hot clicking action here at Film Sociology. Over at the Skyline Drive-In, you have Poltergeist, the original, The Amityville Horror, the original, and The Exorcist, all happening at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Okay, couple titles that were sent to me, one courtesy of Cornet Films, is called America Square, and apparently this was the Greek entry into the Academy Awards for Best Foreign Film, set in a small neighborhood in a major Greek city. We have Neko, who is your token schlubby xenophobe staying at home with his parents, his longtime friend Billy, who's a tattoo artist, and what happens when their lives, along with two immigrants, a father and a daughter from Syria, get separated from a chance to move to sneak into Italy. All of these interactions happen, one of these intertwining plots, tense story without tense filmmaking, and a little homage for Humphrey Bogart for Billy the tattoo artist. It's a decent story, not heavy-handed. It's not an American film about race relations. This one is Greek. So America Square, with a K, is on video courtesy of Cornet Films. Courtesy of Indie Picks is a 2017 film called The Heat After the Rain, about a couple dealing slash not dealing with a miscarriage. Along the way, she goes on a religious pilgrimage, which is, I believe, La Basica, La Virgin de Los Angeles, and where Juana, the mother, who is still the grieving mother, is walking as a part of it, runs into her ex-boyfriend, spending the evening with him, but not the night with him. Less chatty than, say, the Richard Linklater Before series. And then she goes to her parents' house. It's a slice of life with an introduction into her head. And kudos to Milena Picado for holding it. She's she plays Juana, and she's the anchor of this film. Definitely see this for her performance. And it's dealing with the next stage in life, no matter how much the past life chapter hurts. Box says it's 70 minutes long. It's actually 64. So it's swift. I shouldn't say swift. It's short and makes its point, and still poignant. So check out The Heat After the Rain, courtesy of Indie Picks. And then I watched not one, not two, but three films by Ingmar Bergman. I'm getting closer and closer to finishing this Criterion Ingmar Bergman box set. I believe I have the special features to Autumn Sonata, Fanny and Alexander, and then the two bonus discs. And then I will be done, finally completing watching all of the discs. I'll get to it. But we start with 1958's Brink of Life. And this is on the same disc as with a film called Waiting Women, which I'll get to in a moment. Brink of Life is set in a maternity ward. We have a series of ladies who are in labor and the different attitudes and different life situations that go with it. One of the expecting mothers is calling the father, who will not visit her, doesn't want it. The nurse trying to convince her that there's no shame in having a baby on your own. This is also Sweden in 1958. We also have a mother and a mother-to-be and father-to-be who are very excited and they're ready for it. But is life's curveballs ready for them? You have this camaraderie between the mothers. Both films have a kind of a lady in waiting feel to them, and it's heartbreaking to watch the three stories as they unfold. Also fairly progressive because you have nursing moments in a film from 1958, and what happens? Strong performances from the leads, and you even see a young Erland Josephson and a young Max von Sydow as two of the fathers in this. And so this is one. It's kind of low on the familiar list, popular list of Bergman films, but it's still pretty effective. Along with it on this disc was a 1952 drama from Bergman called Waiting Women, where a group of wives and their children are in a large country house waiting for their husbands to leave work and come to the country. And it's four stories of how the ladies wound up with their husbands. I know, ladies. I didn't write it. It's 1952. Where we have one dealing with both spouses having an affair, another one who is pregnant and alone, the youngest who's being told that her man is being told to attend business school and join his family's firm, and then one who is married to a successful businessman, and what happens when she tries to go see his brother and there's also a stuck elevator and the truth comes out. So another one with solid performances by the ladies, and that's called Waiting Women from 1952. That's on the same disc on the Criterion Collection, Ingmar Bergman Collection, with Brink of Life. And finally, I finally got to the Academy Award nominated animated film The Breadwinner, which produced by Angelina Jolie. A similar story to the 2003 film Osama. We have an 11-year-old girl living in Afghanistan in 2001. Her father is arrested, and she has to cut her hair and pose as a boy in order to keep working and bringing, title of the film. It's from the creators of Song of the Sea and The Secret of Kells, and it looks really good. And not only that, you have two types of animation. You have the current story in current Afghanistan with flashes of color to go with the grays, I say the beige and the browns of the desert setting, and then a much more colorful sequences when the children are telling stories to the younger children. It's a tense story, danger outside their homes, and sometimes the danger comes right in through their doors. And it does address what happens, we mentioned it's 2001, what happens later in the year. So good work, really good work from the 2000, from the animated film called The Breadwinner. And those are the films I got to see this week. We now go to grab a pencil, and I'm going to find out what you watched this week. We start, of course, on an email from my buddy Eric, who started with the 1927 UK film called Downhill, which he deemed as so-so. Tedious drama about a wealthy prep school student who accepts the blame for the indiscretions of a less fortunate friend and is expelled from school. And it leads to a path of self-destruction. His rewatch was the UK film from 1929 called Blackmail, good plus movie history. And also the original 1934, The Man Who Knew Too Much. Still marvelous, still has Peter Lorre, always fun. Thank you, Eric. All right, going to Twitter, we have from Spooky Walrus, getting his October prep in, the first three Scream films, Fantasy Island, The Game, the documentary De Palma, Jaws 3D, oh God, and Shocker. I saw Jaws 3D in the theater in Long Beach Island, New Jersey. I believe it was the same theater that I saw the original Jaws. That was, of course, Jaws was 1975. Jaws 3D was 1983, and they had taken a single screen theater and break it up into multiple screens. And I saw Jaws 3D there. God awful. So, yeah. Ashley writes, we watch Frost Nixon this week. Let me read that again. We watch Frost Nixon this week. Seemed appropriate. Mm-hmm. Dan Moore writes, save yourselves. How to Deter a Robber, Laughter, The Boy Behind the Door, Small Town Ecstasy, Action USA, The Stylist, The Old Man Movie, and Girl. Scrolling. Welcome to Film Society. And Ann Laker says, The Learning Tree by Gordon Parks, 1969. I own a copy of that. That's very, very cool. And that's it for Twitter. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We go to my Facebook page, and we start with Tommy. Oh, Tommy Owen. All right, I have to name drop a story with Tommy. Tommy Owen, who's a fine actor. You go on IMDb, you've seen him in a slew of things. But many, many years ago, over 30 years ago, Tommy and I shared the stage in Muncie Civic's production of Death of a Salesman, where he played Biff Loman and I played the waiter. Yeah, the waiter in that scene. And kudos also to Sean Stoner as Hap and Frank Gray as Willie. Anyway, he watched King of New York, the Abel Ferrara film with Christopher Walken and Lawrence Fishburne. Judy writes Reds. Khalif writes Sicario, great film. Robert Muggy, who's been a guest on this show. In spite of the title, I trust this counts. Last night I watched This Is Not a Film. Earlier in the week, I watched Dames, directed by Ray Enright and Busby Berkeley. Mary writes Scanners, Ouija, and Devil. Ken writes the Martin Scorsese trilogy of Raging Bull, Casino, and Goodfellas. Dave writes Meet the Browns, Angels and Demons, Trainwreck, and Postcards from the Edge. Nick writes, Nick Rogers, Rogue, Slipping in the Darkness, For Your Height Only, Deadbeat at Dawn, Lady Terminator, The Way of the Gun, Raw Deal, that's the 86 version with Arnold, and Phantasm. I believe this is the FEF Film Festival he is rattling off there. Very good, guys. Darren writes, Son of Dracula and Enola Holmes. And yes, I will get to Enola Holmes. Many people have asked me. Maya writes, Enola Holmes. It was great. Also, 10,000 more hours of Cocomelon. It happens. Megan writes Enola Holmes. Lou writes a pile of Heartland films and during the debate, Galaxy of Terror, plus The Invisible Man. Dustin writes Camille, Ninotchka, Brief Encounter, Blythe Spirit, Kramer versus Kramer, and Southpaw. Joe Shear, Slipping in the Darkness, For Your Height Only, Deadbeat at Dawn, Lady Terminator, Resisterhood, and Eat Wheaties. Manny writes, the 14-part documentary Women Make Film at TCM has been airing every Tuesday. It's cinematic heaven. Rachel writes, The Abduction of Figaro and Seven Deadly Words, a local film with some familiar faces. Dana writes, Easter Parade, Judy Garland and Fred Astaire. Sarah writes, Cruise into Terror. Yeah, TV movie from 1978. Look it up. Quite the cast. Mark writes, Morning Glory. And then put in parentheses, such promise. And an education. Third viewing, so brilliant. Kaylin writes Invisible Man, Enola Holmes, Stepmom, and Ever After. Eric writes Social Dilemma and Rocket Man. Kate writes Spiral, Sweeney Todd, Cult of Chucky, House of the Devil, and The Room. Way to go, Kate. Steve writes Collateral. He writes, Jamie Foxx, Tom Cruise, and I'd forgotten Mark Ruffalo was in it. Abby writes, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Doug writes, Woodstock, Blinded by the Light, and ABBA the Movie. Joshua writes, Glory, Message from the King, Bloodfather, Promised Land, and The Devil All the Time. Greg writes, Cinema Paradiso, The Addams Family, the latest CG remake, and The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Allison writes, I watched an education. Wow, what a story. Matthew writes The Devil All the Time, Enola Holmes, The Social Dilemma, and Jurassic Park, the very first one. Kim writes Marshall. Cassie writes Enola Holmes and Marie Antoinette. Lisa writes The Boys in the Band, but which version? Like Sunday, Like Rain, Enola Holmes, and The Glorias. Devin writes The Hustle, Pick of the Litter, and Netflix versus the World. Jamie writes, I've watched some kiddo Halloween movies. Well, of course, it's now October. Molly writes Palm Springs, Radioactive, Almost Heroes, wow, her writing, The Conspirator, The Great Outdoors. The funniest thing that I'd ever seen The Great Outdoors before, and it's set in Clare County, Michigan, which is basically where I am right now. Crazy. Janet writes Calendar Girls, Fever Pitch, The Iron Lady, The Go-Go's documentary, The Mechanic, and The Good Liar. Which mechanic, Janet? Daniel writes 2017, History of the World Part 1, Let's Make It Legal, Protocol, Enola Holmes, Don't Bother to Knock, It's Complicated, You'll Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger, In a Lonely Place, Get On Up, Downton Abbey, It Too, Mixed Nuts, and Midnight in Paris. Missy writes, I finished Glory and started North and South. I just haven't had a lot of movie watching time, trying to get in porch fire pit time before it gets too cold. I understand, Missy. I get it. Britt writes, Spider-Man Homecoming, A Town Called Panic, The Gentleman, Suicide Squad, The Life and Death of Peter Sellers, Annie, The Devil All the Time, and Jojo Rabbit. Robert writes, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Hadn't seen it in decades. Yes, it's still a great film, but woo-wee, is it dated, and many of the characters slash themes are problematic. The anti-hero is a pedophile, which gets glossed over. The women are either matronly disciplinarians or prostitutes, and there's some horribly cringeworthy ways the indigenous character Chief is treated. Scott writes Jojo Rabbit. Jared writes Hocus Pocus and Enola Holmes. Stefan writes 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, Girls in the Sun, Transformed 2, or Transformer 2, or The Transporter 2. It's misspelled. Christian writes The World Is Not Enough. Roxana writes Enola Holmes. Stacy chimes in, Maya and I can't wait to watch this. We are finishing Stranger Things first. Carrie writes, I started Pet Sematary, but it scared me. I watched The Holiday, and that was fun. Thank you, Carrie. That happens. Guy says, I saw Glory the other day on TV. It was great. Catherine writes, Life of the Party, One Hour Photo, Maleficent, Enola Holmes, Zombieland, Moscow on the Hudson, and Hocus Pocus. Gary writes, The Empire Strikes Back, Jodorowsky's Dune, For Your Eyes Only, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, Annihilation, Thor Ragnarok, Game Night, Solo, A Star Wars Story, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, The Dark Tower, Avengers Infinity War, and Night and Fog. Beverly writes Antebellum, adding, it's disturbing, but it opened my eyes to the persistent white supremacy that is alive and well and getting stronger today. Chris writes Nomadland, storytelling in its finest, and Frances McDormand is once again amazing. Cassandra writes A Simple Favor with Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. Excellent, dark, twisty thriller. David writes Fargo, and he's watched the film and the series. So there's that. Denise writes Enola Holmes. Susie writes The Social Dilemma on Netflix. Polly writes, Hi, Matthew. Just finished watching Peaky Blinders series on Netflix. Thank you, Polly. Marlene writes Away. Melissa writes No Movies This Week. Yikes. Judy writes, If You Could Read My Mind, documentary on the life and music of Gordon Lightfoot, and Finding Your Feet, about a group of over 60 Brits having to begin new chapters in their lives. Craig writes October, 4 Days in July, and Naked. Dave writes Full Metal Jacket, China Syndrome, American Hustle. Terry writes Blood on the Moon, Devil's Doorway, La Collectionneuse, pardon my Italian, The Naked Spur, The Violent Men, and The Sheltering Sky. Tony writes Chinatown and Blazing Saddles on a 70s vibe. Nancy writes On the Basis of Sex, Invisible Man, King of Staten Island, and Dragnet. Melissa now wants me to tell you that she lied. I forgot I watched Practical Magic. Carry on. Will do. Joe writes Equalizer 2 and 42. Allen writes, in advance of its 25th anniversary, the director's cut of The Long Kiss Goodnight with an additional 58 minutes of crucial fight scenes restored. Wow. Oh, and I saw the personal history of David Copperfield in a movie theater. It was like having a private screening. The movie and the experience was delightful. Thanks for asking. Ben writes, Arkansas. Southern noir is the kind of escapism I need right now. Robert writes, Nowhere to Hide. Moveen writes, The Last Emperor, directed by Bernardo Bertolucci. And we bantered a little bit. I remember seeing that in the theater when I was 17 and was the youngest one in the audience by a good 30 years. That also happened when I was dropped off by my folks so I could see Amadeus in 1984. And finally, Camille writes, Red and Red 2. Loved it. And there you go, folks. That's what you've watched this week. So hopefully you got some film ideas to watch. And hopefully you're checking out something that is new or at least new to you. And before we wrap things up, I do want to raise a glass to two people that passed away on the same day, both known more for their music, and they did a handful of films here and there. Helen Reddy passed away. Of course, I Am Woman. And I have to thank Helen and for that song because for decades, I have said, I am man, hear me oink. So thank you, Helen, for that. But she's best known as Sister Ruth, yes, the singing nun in Airport 75, which was also later parodied in Airplane. She was also Nora in Pete's Dragon and also appeared in the film Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Disorderlies, that's the one with the fat boys, The Perfect Host, and apparently the just completed Senior Entourage. As well as Mac Davis, who actually had a longer career, had about 30-plus credits of movies and TV. His best work, still his first film, where he played quarterback Seth Maxwell in North Dallas 40 with Nick Nolte. Now, physically, not the strongest representative of a quarterback, but verbally, he had the quarterback swagger, and it was fun to revisit North Dallas 40. Still holds up, that blurry area on when is it a sport and when is it a business. And the less we talk about Cheaper to Keeper and The Sting 2, that's just all the better. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're staying healthy. And if you get a chance, if you're willing, come out to the Cat this weekend and next weekend to see a radio version of Neil Simon's Plaza Suite. You can go to thecattheater.com for ticket information. And until next time, take care. Take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father. Okay.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!